Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to take source material and really pull out the most vital insights for you. Today, we're diving deep into a really powerful blog post. It's called How to Not Burn Out. Now, it was originally written with frontline workers, healthcare professionals in mind, but honestly, its advice feels relevant for pretty much anyone dealing with, well, modern life pressures. So our mission today, we want to extract actionable strategies, things you can actually do to manage stress and avoid that burnout cliff edge. We're drawing all this from this one really potent source. Expect some practical techniques, maybe a few surprising facts, and hopefully those aha moments that help you build up your own resilience.
Yeah, and what's interesting is how the source kicks off by just acknowledging that stress is, well, universal. It specifically highlights 2020, those unprecedented challenges, and the long-term effects we're still seeing. It makes a crucial point. We hear about the physical side of COVID-19 recovery, like fatigue, maybe muscle pain, that sort of thing. But the mental health impacts, they can affect anyone. It doesn't matter if you actually had the virus or not.
That's right. And it backs us up with some pretty sobering research, actually. There's a 2010 paper it mentions, looking back at the 2003 SARS outbreak. It found a 30% jump in suicides among people over 65 in the worst hit countries. And then more recently, a 2020 review showed that frontline staff, key workers, they're all at a higher risk for things like trauma, stress disorders, depression, anxiety.
It really paints a picture, doesn't it? And it sets the stage for why just understanding and acknowledging these risks is so incredibly important, which, you know, leads to the big question. Okay, we know the risks. Now what? What can we actually do about it? And that's where our source is great. It gives us 7 really practical, actionable tips. It moves us beyond just knowing there's a problem to actually supporting ourselves day to day.
Okay, let's jump into the first one then. Tip number 1, you don't have to go through this alone. Sounds simple, but maybe it's not.
Well, it directly tackles that huge issue, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The stigma around mental health. The source really hammers this home. Mental health issues are nothing to be ashamed of. It's not a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And it cites the BACP. That's the British Association for Counseling and Psychotherapy. They state that even in a normal year, something like 25% of people in Britain experience mental health issues.
Wow, 1 in 4. And that's before you even factor in the pandemic's impact.
Exactly. So it normalizes it. It shows these challenges are widespread wherever you happen to be.
And it makes the point that, you know, mental health is just as important as physical health. Sometimes you do need professional help. It suggests resources like welldoing.org if you want to explore counseling options.
Yeah. But it also gives advice for people who maybe don't feel they need or want professional help right now. It suggests looking for local resources, social groups. I love the example it gives, like a stitch and bitch group, very specific. Or using remote platforms like Meetup. The main idea is just finding that connection, finding your community, whatever that looks like for you.
Okay, so connection is key. Now, the second tip delves into something we hear about a lot, resilience. What does the source actually mean by resilience?
Good question. It defines resilience pretty clearly, basically, the ability to be tough or to bounce back.
Mm.
More specifically, it talks about psychological resilience. That's your capacity to cope emotionally, mentally with a crisis, and then, crucially, get back to how you were before, relatively quickly.
Right, not just getting through it, but recovering properly.
Exactly.
And I like the analogy it uses, treating resilience like a muscle you can build up. That feels quite empowering, especially when things feel so out of control.
It is. But like any muscle, you have to exercise it.
So how do we do that? What's the workout plan for the resilience muscle?
Well, the source emphasizes a really holistic approach. It's not just one thing. It suggests looking at several areas: your emotional well-being, your self-respect, how well you identify and manage your emotions.
Okay.
Also your physical health. That means things like sleep, eating well, maybe just getting out for a daily walk.
The basics, but they matter.
They really do. Then there's personal development. Are you learning? Maybe from books or podcasts, and perhaps most importantly, your relationships. It really underscores how vital a strong social network is for both emotional and practical support.
So it's a whole person approach. What's the biggest hurdle people face when trying to, you know, consistently exercise this muscle?
I think the source implies the biggest challenge is often just starting, especially when you're already feeling worn down. And then keeping it up, that consistency piece.
Right. Makes sense. Okay, so you're building resilience, but inevitably, small things will still crop up and feel huge in the moment. That brings us to tip 3. decatastrophizing.
Ah, yes. Preventing the making mountains out of molehills trap.
Totally. Like the examples in the source, someone not loading the dishwasher, right? Or, oh, the classic, someone eating your sandwich at work.
It sounds trivial, but in that moment, it can feel like the end of the world, right?
Absolutely. A 10 out of 10 catastrophe. So how does decatastrophizing help pull us back from that?
It gives a very clear step-by-step method. First, step away from the situation. Just take 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Focus on your breathing in through the nose, out through the mouth. Simple.
Okay, create some space.
Exactly. Then reflect. What's really bothering you? Is it actually the sandwich?
Mm.
Or is that just, you know, the spark that lit a bigger fire?
Hmm, getting to the root cause.
Then you rate it.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how truly awful would it be if this thing happened? Be honest.
Okay, like really rate the sandwich theft.
Then reality check. How likely is this catastrophe actually to happen? After that, think about how you want to react versus how you probably will react. You know, picturing the calm response versus the white hot rage.
Yes.
And finally, after all that,
yeah,
re-rate the awfulness, go back to that 1-10 scale. Has it shifted? Usually it has.
That's a really practical tool. It gives you perspective, stops that downward spiral. It connects back to that whole holistic view again.
Precisely. It stops the mental deterioration before it takes hold.
Okay, so building on that, tip number 4 is about getting organized and monitoring your thoughts. This sounds like being proactive.
It is. It's about spotting those triggers before they send you into a spiral. It's all about self-awareness.
How do you do that practically?
The source suggests something quite concrete. Grab a pen and paper. Actually, write down things you think might be triggers for you. Explore the details. The who, what, where, when, why of these triggers.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're mapping out your own emotional danger zones.
Okay, mapping it out. Then what?
Then you kind of assess them. How strongly do you actually believe in these triggers? Give it a percentage rating.
A percentage. Interesting.
Yeah, and then consider the consequences. If you react negatively to this trigger, what's the impact? On your mental health? On your relationship?
Right, thinking through the ripple effects.
Exactly. And the source uses that phrase, forewarned is forearmed. Just the act of identifying these triggers, mentally preparing for them, actually builds your resilience. It adds capacity to that resilience muscle because you're less likely to be caught off guard.
So, identifying triggers helps conserve energy. Okay, once we've identified them, how do we work on changing our reaction? That leads us to tip 5. Looking at situations from different angles using the 5 E's.
Yes, this is a really comprehensive framework. It's designed to help you think critically and basically reframe your perspective.
Okay, what are the 5 E's?
Right, so they are. First, examine. Look for the evidence, what actually supports or refutes the thought or emotion you're having.
Okay, evidence first.
Second, explore. What are your personal reasons for thinking or feeling this way? Dig a bit deeper into your own motivations or history.
Getting personal.
Third, expose. This is about uncovering any biases you might have that are influencing your view. We all have them.
Ooh, that sounds tricky.
It can be. Fourth, expand. Try to broaden your viewpoint. Look at it from other angles, maybe someone else's perspective, to get a more rounded understanding.
Widen the lens.
And fifth, experiment. Find a new, maybe even an exciting way to react to the situation. Break the old pattern.
Examine, explore, expose, expand, experiment. That's quite a toolkit. For someone feeling overwhelmed, is there one E that's maybe easier to start with or one that gives quicker results?
That's a good point. The force suggests expose, uncovering biases, can be the most challenging as it needs real self-reflection. But examine, just looking at the hard evidence often gives the quickest shift. It grounds you back in reality and challenges those irrational thoughts straight away.
Right. Start with the facts. That makes sense. Okay. So we've talked about actively analyzing thoughts. Tip 6 takes a slightly different approach. Mindfulness. We hear this word everywhere. What's the core idea here?
The source defines it really simply. Mindfulness is just our ability to pay full attention right here, right now, in this single moment. It points out something quite interesting. And our minds are so used to constant stimulation, aren't they? We actually struggle to just do nothing, to just be.
Yeah, the silence can be deafening sometimes.
Exactly. So mindfulness isn't about emptying your mind, which is a common misconception. It's more about changing your relationship with your thoughts, letting them come and go without getting swept away by them.
Just letting go of the resistance, being with what is. Why is that so helpful in managing stress?
Well, one key thing the source highlights is the link to something called executive control.
Executive control. Sounds important.
It is. Think of it like the CEO of your brain. It manages decision-making, impulse control, focus, all the important stuff. By practicing mindfulness, consciously paying attention to your emotions as they happen, without immediate reaction, you're actually strengthening that CEO.
Okay. So you get better at managing your responses.
Precisely. You can delay, or sometimes even eliminate, those really exaggerated reactions to negative feelings. Better executive control means more willpower, more resilience to stress. In fact, the source points out that using those other techniques we talked about, like decatastrophizing or the 5 E's, are themselves active ways of improving your executive control too.
So it all ties together. It's not just a nice to have, it actively builds mental strength.
Exactly. And the source gives a really simple exercise anyone can try. Just 5 minutes. Stop what you're doing, maybe close your eyes, and just actively listen.
Mm.
Don't judge, don't comment internally, just listen. Listen to the sounds outside you, and maybe even the sounds inside you, what's going on in your body or mind. That's your starting point for mindfulness.
5 minutes. Sounds doable. Okay, our final tip, number 7. This one sounds a bit more enjoyable, maybe. Finding your personal sanctuary.
Yes, after all those quite active, mentally engaging tips, this one is really about the vital importance of rest and retreat, proper downtime.
We all need that. What kind of examples does it give?
Well, it gives a lovely one. A hot bath with Epsom salts, maybe a candle, some calming spa music, described simply as heaven.
Okay, I can get behind that.
But the core message isn't necessarily about bath. It's about identifying what your personal sanctuary is, what truly allows you to switch off and recharge.
Right, it could be anything, really. Reading, music, walking in nature.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the key is, once you identify it, you need to actually do it. Indulge in it. Create and protect that space for yourself to just be without guilt.
That guilt part is important, isn't it? Giving yourself permission.
Definitely.
Okay, so let's quickly recap those 7 strategies we've unpacked from this deep dive. We had, don't go it alone, seek support. Understand and build your resilience holistically. Practice decatastrophizing, stop mountains becoming molehills. Then get organized and monitor your thoughts and triggers. Use the 5 E's to look at things from different angles. Practice mindfulness to strengthen executive control. And finally, find and indulge in your personal sanctuary.
Yeah. And what's really clear when you lay them out like that is how interconnected they are. They aren't just separate tricks. They're tools that work together to build your overall capacity to cope and hopefully even thrive. The source even mentions some free online resources like resiliencyquiz.com or testyourrq.com, where you can actually get a snapshot of your own resilience levels.
Oh, that's useful. And it also highlighted real-world support, didn't it? Like that Carer's First Charity in Hackney example.
Exactly. Offering practical info, advice, even free online training through another group. It's a great reminder that specific local help often exists if you look for it, tailored to different needs.
Wherever you are, yeah.
So I suppose the real question this leaves us with for you listening is, thinking about all these ideas, what's just one small thing, one small step you could take, maybe even today? Could you do something small to build that resilience muscle?
Yeah.
Or maybe carve out just a few minutes for that moment of sanctuary?
That's the challenge, isn't it? Just starting small. We really hope this deep dive has given you some useful shortcuts, maybe some surprising facts, and definitely some practical tools for managing stress and hopefully avoiding burnout.